Welcome, Gallatin Valley. This is Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. We are co-hosts of Health and Happiness program here on KGVM 95.9 FM, radio, and KGVM.org on the Internet. The Public Education Committee of the Montana Psychological Association supports our presentation. In our listening audience are many people who use resources in our community without knowing their history and their current needs. Today, you will become aware of a resource that has been in Bozeman for over one half century and is into a new major project. Listen as Dr. Suzanne Wood introduces.
Welcome, and as we begin today, we'd like to point out that research indicates in a study of those who have attempted suicide but have somehow managed to survive that they are so very grateful they did not die and they realize it was a terrible mistake. One person who jumped from a bridge said he realized as he fell that he was wrong in his attempt, and he was so fortunate to be pulled from the river. If only we could reach those who are contemplating suicide and give them the help and support they need. Today, we have with us two people who are dedicated to reaching those in sadness, distress, and danger. Please welcome two representatives from Bozeman Help Center, Perrin and Mandy. Could you please introduce yourselves and your job titles and descriptions for our audience, Perrin and Mandy?
Of course. So I'm Perrin. I've been with the Help Center since 2010. I started as a volunteer and have worked in many of the programs that the Help Center has. I'm here today as the community educator. So a part of my role is going into the community and providing education on topics like suicide intervention and prevention, trauma-informed care, mental health 101, and how to support ourselves and each other when we're experiencing mental health symptoms, as well as how to support ourselves and those around us when they've experienced trauma.
And my name is Mandy, and I've been with the Help Center about 15 years, started as a crisis counselor, and now I'm the development and communications coordinator and helping our organization get out into the community, letting people know about the Help Center and all of our programs, and then also help with our fundraising initiatives as well.
I'm so happy to have you two. And I'm reading that from 2011 to 2022, over 500,000 lives were lost to suicide, with 2022 showing the highest number. Within this period, the suicide rate has increased by 16%. So it sounds like to me you really have your work cut out for you.
Yeah, we know that community members, we know that people within our state and our country are experiencing thoughts of suicide. And the more that we raise awareness, the more that we talk about it, the hope is that those having thoughts of suicide will feel the support and be willing to share with someone who is supportive for them. And those in the community will notice that suicide is present, that there are people in the community with thoughts of suicide, and be open to having discussion and to support those with thoughts of suicide.
Yeah, and September is Suicide Prevention Month, the month that we're currently in, and one of the goals is to raise awareness about suicide and continue to work to destigmatize talking about mental health, seeking help, and also talking about suicide and suicidal thoughts as well.
while we're at it, and especially since Montana just made a terrible achievement of being the leading state in the nation right now for suicide, we'd like for you to give to our audience out there, anyone who might be feeling the need right now, the numbers to call, and then let's talk about what happens when somebody calls.
Yeah, I can give the numbers. So as you said, the Hope Center's been around for half a century. We do have a local number, 406-586-3333. And then we are also a 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline Center. We answer that phone number for 13 counties in Southwest Montana. And that is available to 24/7 to anyone who is struggling with suicidal thoughts or just needs someone to talk to or needs help supporting someone in their life that they're worried about. And then we also are a 211 call center as well. So that number is more set up for information and referrals, but anyone can call 211 and get immediate help 24/7 as well.
So let's remember 988 and 211 for sure. And either one of those could allow for help to someone out there. And I notice, especially in Montana, we need to be concerned if we have a child. Because we had Carl Roston on, who's the statewide suicide prevention coordinator, who said that since COVID, there have been four times more children within that suicide mode than there were before. So be sure to call one of these numbers if you have a question. So, Karen and Mandy, should people out there, one of the old thoughts is, if someone's talking about suicide, they aren't really serious and they're not going to go ahead with that. What would you say to that old premise?
Well, we know that that's not true, that a person can be talking about suicide and their risk of death is just as high. I sometimes hear that kind of like misconception of suicide around, like, if they're talking about it, they just want attention. And partly my response is, why wouldn't we give attention? If a person is saying that they are struggling to the point that they are thinking about suicide, why wouldn't we give attention to that? Why would we minimize or ignore a person who is saying that they have death on the mind? And so we know that people can say and talk about suicide and still die from suicide. So we know that, that's a myth. That's often a misconception we have around suicide.
And on the flip side, there's lots of people who are thinking about it but don't say anything, but they are potentially showing signs and symptoms of having those thoughts. So some common ones, and Perrin, we can kind of popcorn, but are, you know, saying things like, it wouldn't matter if I wasn't here right now, or I just want to sleep and not wake up, or I don't want to be a burden to anyone. Do you have some other ones? There's a whole list.
Yeah, of like, I don't matter, people won't be sad if I'm not here anymore, or things would just be easier if it was all over. So those kinds of statements can signal that thoughts of suicide are present, but a person's not saying it directly. Also, like changes in their behavior, the way that they approach friends, family, maybe they withdraw, or maybe they are re-engaging in a way that gives you pause of, like, you know, why are we talking about your prized possessions and who gets them? Maybe they're withdrawing from community, like groups, or maybe they have faith and they're withdrawing from those things. Increased addiction, so like alcohol use or drug use, can be a signal also. And then mood changes. Maybe they go from expressing hopelessness and sadness to all of a sudden expressing like joy or happiness that feels like it changed out of nowhere. Or maybe they go from someone who experienced joy and sadness like in a balanced way to a person that only is experiencing depression. And so those kinds of things can be signals also that a person is thinking about suicide.
So if one should see some of these red flags for suicide, many would be reluctant to bring it up, but would you say it's a good idea to say to the person, are you thinking of, how would one of our listeners out there approach that with a loved one? What's your advice?
I would say there are kind of two things there that a person could do. It is always better to ask than to not. And so phrasing that question any way that is judgment-free. So saying like, I've noticed these changes, give the reasons you're asking the question, and then say, are you thinking of suicide? Are you thinking of killing yourself? And then after asking that question, connecting them to services that can provide support. And then if you're like, I'm not sure if I can ask that question, I need help figuring out this situation, you can always just call the help center at the 988 number, our local 586-3333 number, and ask those questions. We are available to help ask those questions and to support in situations like that.
And I'm so proud of the work that the Help Center does. You help not only with cases of this nature, but you have several other things that you provide for our community. Could you tell us perhaps some about the Sexual Assault Counseling Center that you provide?
Yes, of course. So I am the program manager also of the Sexual Assault Counseling Center. And so we provide free ongoing counseling and advocacy services to adult survivors of sexual violence. We have counselor advocates on call 24 hours a day. We're available to respond to an emergency. So if a person is seeking medical care, we are able to respond. If a person is wanting to talk to law enforcement, we can be present for that. We also provide ongoing long-term therapy and advocacy. All of our counselor advocates are trained in trauma support methods and are available to support them.
And our local number, the 586-3333, is you can reach a counselor advocate 24/7, whether the incident was recent or in the past, and they're available as a support line as well.
We've had others on this radio show from community health partners, from the police station. And what I just thought was phenomenal is how the agencies have worked together to set up the most helpful and most therapeutic way possible to help those with this problem. And it really is set up to be amenable to their needs. Could you kind of describe how it all works together with medical, police presence, and with the helpline, the Sexual Assault Center?
Yeah, of course. And so part of a person when they experience sexual violence, some people want to engage in legal action. And what we know is that in supporting any person, we know that it takes a community because a person is interacting with different organizations. And so if as organizations we can work together, we are more successful in supporting that person. It also helps us provide education to each other. So us learning how different pieces of this system, different organizations that are providing different services, how we can work together and better support not just each other in this process, but those who have entered our care, right? Whether that be through a person needs medical care immediately after something has happened, or a person who has experienced sexual violence in the past and is wanting to seek services, both maybe through therapy, but also seeing how the law enforcement process would go, or talking with legal advocacy through the victim services office. And so by working together, we're more able to provide kind of like a whole body, a whole person service, so that they know and can feel support in the community. It also gives us an opportunity when a person says, you know, this thing didn't go well, to be able to address those concerns so that they don't continue to be ongoing.
And in listening to the different agencies that help that person in need, it seemed that their whole effort was to make it the least painful, the least disruptive that they could for that person coming in for help, and to surround that person with the comfort and care and medical support that's required. I was really impressed. And Dr. Myers with Community Health Partners was so thankful for the services of the Help Center. And of course, so are we. And that leads me to another service that you provide, which is the Child Advocacy Center.
Yes, so the Gallatin County Child Advocacy Center, we provide very similar services, but for children and their caregivers who have experienced sexual violence or severe physical abuse. So we work with a multidisciplinary team to provide a safe environment for that child to share their experience, and to be able to communicate and share the process. So after a child discloses that they've experienced violence of some kind, to be able to have communication about the process and to share in that, but also providing support then to their caregivers of talking with them about their experiences, how their reactions to this. Because as a parent, this isn't something that you ever want to go through, and this isn't a thing that you ever expect to go through as a parent. So providing support for them also. We provide that counseling and the advocacy services for the whole family, as well as education on like how children share these things, what they might share moving forward in the future, things to notice, and how to provide that loving unconditional support for them as they move through the experience of sharing and everything that comes after.
And that's our counselor advocates are amazing, amazing people. And that's the beauty of our model. And a common model with child advocacy centers is that the counselor advocate is really their liaison to all of these different disciplines, so that they don't have to make 20 different phone calls and try to navigate systems on their own. That's their counselor advocates are their partners in navigating kind of a complicated system. And so that's a key role that we are proud to play.
Yes, you hate to think that the complexities of the system, the police presence, the medical presence, all of that could be abrasive. So it seems to me that everyone on this team is working to make it as supportive and positive as helpful in a difficult situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also was wondering if you could tell us about another program of these many fabulous programs, the Hearts and Homes program.
Yeah, so the Hearts and Homes Family Resource Center provides supportive family visitation services to families that are separated either through foster care or kinship care, or families are separated for all sorts of reasons, and we're here to support them. So that we provide family visitation, parent coaching. We also provide some workshops and education programs for families that are experiencing separation or going through divorce. And then we also help with custody exchange services as well. So yeah, that's another one of our programs, and providing support to families and children.
If you'll pardon my characterizing it, I would say that each one of these programs is a biggie. It's a lot to manage. It makes me wonder, how do you all take care of yourselves? Because there's high risk when you're dealing with this kind of difficulty on a daily basis and seeing all of this as well. So how do you all take care of yourselves?
I'll let Perrin chime in as well, but I feel like the culture of our organization is very supportive, and we always have someone to debrief with, which is a key component of our organization. So when these hard situations happen, there's always someone 24/7 that staff member or that volunteer can debrief with. And potentially relieve them if they need to take a step back for a little bit. So that's a big component of our organization.
Yeah, you're so far ahead of me. That's great. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mandy stole mine. That's what I was going to say. I really do think that cultural kind of piece plays such a big role for us. Because we know we're not alone in a situation, that we don't have to navigate situations without support. That if I have a question, I know that someone will be available to support me. And then when things are difficult or hard, or I need to take a break, someone will be there to support me and kind of give me that space to do so. And I think the other kind of piece of that is us as individuals figuring out not just how we navigate this culture that really is kind of, at least for me, maybe like the heart of the Help Center, but navigating that space of like, what are those things that work for me, or what are those things that are supportive? So like, I as an individual, what are those things that kind of bring me back to center, or bring me back to being grounded in those moments, and exploring all of those things of like, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it is breathing, or maybe it's something different. And so really having the space to explore what those things are for us.
I'm so glad that you're attending to that aspect. And I think we all should give you a round of applause daily. I've been very impressed with your history of over 50 years, and there's some wonderful new developments on the horizon here. We just heard about those last week, and we had Patrick Bowman from the Daily Chronicle writing all about it in the newspapers. Tell us about this extravaganza event that occurred.
Yeah, so last week we announced that we have a campaign called Answering the Call, the campaign for Help Center Inc. We have been bursting at the seams for years, I would say decades actually, and are pretty limited in our space. So we have our house on Peach Street, which is a small, little over 1,000 square foot house. We've been there since the 90s. And then we have another location off of Babcock and Fowler. And so our programs are spread out between two buildings, and both are very limiting as far as what we can provide. And so we have intentions to purchase the mental health campus, which is currently owned by Western Montana Mental Health. It's off of farmhouse in Hagerty, over across from the Bozeman Health. And that will that campus is a 5-acre campus, 5 buildings. 3 of the buildings will be usable by our programs, and will finally give us the space that we need to perform the really, really hard work that we were just talking about. And so being able to finally have space that meets the work that we do, and give us the space that we need to serve our really amazing clients, have a space where our team members feel like they have the space that they need and are proud of the space that they can come to work every day. And we also know that this is just, it's a good thing for the community, that we can provide all of our programs in one space. And then also sustainably, I'm going to underline that word in my voice, sustainably grow our programs. A lot of our programs have grown over the years, and to be able to be in a facility that can help us continue to meet that need is important.
Absolutely. And so this is going to be a whole community effort, and we all need to think about what our contribution can be. So I understand that we need to raise some money here. Is that correct?
That is correct. So our campaign goal is to raise $4.5 million. That will help us purchase the campus. The close date for that is in March of 2024. And then we also have built into the campaign total necessary renovations that we know that we will need to make the facilities work for our programs and our needs. And then also an additional for additional program support to support our growing programs and our growing organization. So if people are interested in learning more or would like to contribute, they can go to bozemanhelpcenter.org/campaign.
I was very impressed at the meeting a few days ago where all of this was announced for the community. And I was very proud that Mike and Andrea Manship made a wonderful contribution of $500,000. And so just to encourage all of us out here in the Gallatin Valley, they said they would also match with another $500,000 every gift that comes in. Is that correct? Did I understand that right?
Yeah, so right now we currently have a $500,000 match. So basically the next $500,000 will be matched dollar for dollar by Andrea and Michael Manship.
Oh, kudos to them.
Yes, we're very grateful.
Yeah. I don't think you could reach much further into the heart of the community than with this program. So for all of our listeners out there, this is a very worthy way to direct any donation money or efforts that you might have. And so we really want to encourage all of us to do our part. And how would they give us that address again, that email address?
So you can go to our website. It's bozemanhelpcenter.org/campaign, or it's linked on our homepage as well.
Or if somebody wanted to drop by your office and hand over a check. Some of us are more old-fashioned. Where's your office located?
So during business hours, people can stop by 421 East Peach Street in Bozeman.
Excellent. Now, I understand that when folks heard about you having the possibility for this wonderful new campus, you had some other community groups join you. So I understand that the Human Resources Development Council, HRDC, is going to have a presence on your campus. And tell us about that.
Yeah, so a part of the 5 acres and 5 buildings are, there's two buildings, two of those 5 buildings are affordable housing units. And our plan is for HRDC to manage those units for us. They are the, you know, one of the housing experts in our community, and so we're excited that they will be coming on board to help us with that. And then Community Health Partners, who provide excellent physical and behavioral health services in our community, plan to provide a portion of their behavioral health services from the campus. They will be leasing space back from us. So we're excited to welcome those two nonprofit partners to campus.
I really love the interaction here. That makes it so much powerful when you have medical, psychological counseling services. And you really seem to put your money where your mouth is, actual housing units, because quite often homelessness is part of the problem. And I know we've had Brian Geyer from HRDC, who's head of housing there, numerous times on to talk about that issue and to talk about how really important it is for people to have a protected space.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the two buildings that hold the affordable housing units will be affordable housing units in perpetuity. So we're excited to continue to offer that to the community.
Very exciting.
I'd like to mention that it seems that behavioral health has been, Bozeman Health has been quite supportive of this effort. Is that correct?
So Bozeman Health, so Western Montana Mental Health built that campus back in 2008, and Bozeman Health donated the land that the property was built on. And so we're grateful to that for them doing that back in 2008. And then Western Montana Mental Health has paid forward that land donation. And so they are giving us the property at well below the appraised value due to that land donation in the first place. So we're grateful to both Western Montana Mental Health and Bozeman Health for those gifts.
It seems neat that there's been a push in the community for greater inpatient psychiatric care and psychological care. And as I understand it, there is a plan for Bozeman Health to have some inpatient beds involved in their hospital. And this whole area appears to be a very kind of a congealing, a intersection of different mental health resources that's occurring there in the eastern part of Bozeman. Is that correct?
So currently Bozeman Health has psychiatric emergency services. They have four units that are sort of close to their emergency services department to help with people that present at the ER or need to seek higher level of care. So they currently have those available to the community.
And I understand from others who've been on the show that will expand over the next year when they have something like 10 units that could help?
Yeah, if you say so. There's a lot. I feel like there's so much going on in the community around mental health.
Yeah. So, that is the latest news. There could be something different, but it's very exciting that we would have a place here in Bozeman for people that are having a mental health crisis, and that they don't have to drive them to Billings or Helena, that they can perhaps receive the help they need right here and also along with the help center.
Yeah, and the help center, our crisis counselors are, again, our whole team is amazing, but we, when someone calls us, we are able to stabilize 75% of those who call us over the phone without needing to use other community resources, such as sending them to the ER, other crisis stabilization services. And so we do a really great job when we are not able to stabilize that individual over the phone. Another possibility we have in Gallatin County is the mobile crisis team. And they're available not quite 24/7 yet, but they're available for a good chunk of the day. And so that's another resource that is new within the last 2 years. Don't
what
quote us on
the mobile crisis team.
Yeah, so when someone wants to see someone in person, the mobile crisis team is able to respond to where that person is. And so they can have someone come to their, it could be their work, it could be their house, wherever they are, and have someone talk to them in person. And so it's just another sort of a next elevated level of care that we help triage that service. And, you know, we talk to people on the phone, and then if it seems like it's a good fit for the mobile crisis team to go to them, we're excited for that newer resource to be available in our community too.
What's really neat about that is that sometimes in the past, with those kinds of calls, police would be sent out when it's really not necessarily a violent situation, and the mobile crisis team can really ameliorate that problem. Is that correct?
Yeah, so they will, yes, that is correct.
That they, in many ways, what you're saying is that really on a, not only is it helpful in the way of emotional behavioral support, is that it actually, what you do, saves the community resources because you reduce the likelihood of a more tragic event and actually, in many ways, saves the government money by providing preventive resources.
Yeah, so using community-based resources such as the Help Center and Mobile Crisis Team is definitely a more cost-effective way to, and also more trauma-informed and person-centered way, which is much more like the Help Center.
And you all are trained. We've had police officers on to describe having to drive people to Helena or wherever, and that they're not trained necessarily in the needs of these people the way that you all are. So it's relieving them of duties and providing the care needed so that they don't have to make that attempt.
Yeah, so we are available to provide that support. And as Mandy said, like 75% of our contacts do end up stabilizing through contact with us, and we kind of avoid entering in those higher care situations. And law enforcement does have a crisis intervention team. So they're I believe that's the actual name, and I could be getting it very wrong, and I apologize to radio listeners. But the acronym we use is CIT trained officers. And so they're crisis intervention trained officers who can respond, and they have training in supporting those who are experiencing trauma or mental health crisis or maybe an addiction crisis. So they have training to provide support in those moments also.
Okay, so they have upped their game as well. I was going to ask... back on that information that we've had a pretty major increase in child suicide, both efforts and completions of suicide. Tell us more about the Child Advocacy Center, how it works, how somebody would get in touch, and some of the things to look for in children.
So the Gallatin County Child Advocacy Center, they provide services for children who have experienced that sexual violence or physical violence. But if an adult or a caregiver or a friend or someone is concerned about a child having thoughts of suicide, they can reach out to the Help Center. And all of our volunteers and our staff are trained to provide support in those moments. So if someone under the age of 18 is experiencing thoughts of suicide, we can provide support and answer questions and talk about services. For children experiencing thoughts of suicide, it's not uncommon for those signals to be very similar. So like mood changes, which if you've ever had a teenager, mood changes are a part of the territory. And also still signals that something might be going on for them, that they are experiencing thoughts of suicide or that depression and anxiety or other aspects of their mental health are being affected. withdrawal from, not just from you as parents, because a lot of teenagers go through the stage of like, I don't hang out with you, I'm too cool for you, mom and dad. But withdrawal from their friends, where they are isolating even from those people that you think teenagers would want to hang around with. Substance use continues to be a signal if the child is engaging in like drug use or alcohol use under age. That is a signal. And so all those signals that we shared earlier are true for kids also. The one thing that is more concerning for people under the age of 18 or young people under the age of 25 is that young people are impulsive. And so they might have a thought of suicide and engage in that behavior before their brain and their body have fully processed what that means. And so when young people have thoughts of suicide, it is concerning because of that impulsivity, where someone who's 35, 45 or older, their brain and their body might engage faster of saying like, okay, we're thinking about suicide. What does that mean? What do we do? Whereas a younger person, their brain doesn't engage the same way. And so the impulsivity in younger humans is higher.
And we also provide, this is for anyone, but we also provide crisis walk-in services during daytime hours. And so we work closely with the school systems. So when students may they themselves present that they are in some sort of crisis, or a friend may report that, hey, I think something's going on with my friend. And so we're available for caregivers to bring over those kiddos to the Help Center. And they can meet with a crisis counselor and we can talk to them right there and then. And then another component is our follow-up program is a big piece of what we do. So someone who calls in a crisis, we will follow up with them for whatever that looks like for them. Sometimes it's a week, sometimes it could be months, depending on what's going on for them. And that is an evidence-based way to continue to keep someone from escalating again, or keeping them and to keep them stabilized, and then also provide that ongoing support until they're connected to longer-term care. We are very conscious of the fact that there is a mental health provider shortage in our community and really nationwide. And so if we can continue to help that person stay stable before they get connected to longer term care, that's a big piece of what we do as well.
Well, I would say, in my judgment, 75% success in talking over the phone and helping people and being able to direct them and give them the information and resources they need is very highly effective. Kudos.
Yeah, that is a pretty high rate. I think it's a little bit, I don't know if it's higher than the national average, but it's a pretty high rate to be able to. Sometimes people, the amount of relief that we see from people just needing to talk to someone, and just that act of, we understand that picking up the phone can be a scary first step, but the act of just talking to someone who isn't judging them and can listen to them for as long as they need to, is a huge amount of relief for people. And getting connected to us longer term through our follow-up program is just another tool in our tool belt to keep people safe.
And Arliss can tell you that there's no way to use your regret after you have died by suicide. But I can remember being in the breakfast room one evening when someone called in a garage with the door closed to the garage and the car running, saying goodbye. So he was able, with quick work and running across the street to the neighbors to call for help. I did that, that we were able to pull this person back, who later came in person and thanked us. So what you're doing is pulling people back and helping them rearrange and reestablish a foothold in the world as we know it.
I also wanted to ask, do you feel like you have a relationship with the school systems and public schools where they can make appropriate referrals?
Yes. We do work with a lot, if not most or all of the schools in Gallatin County to support students and staff when they're needing either crisis support or they're seeking long-term services from the community. We do have good relationships.
Do you go out and talk to the students, or is it a referral to your offices?
It kind of depends what program we're kind of discussing. So if the school notices or is aware that a student might need support, they provide a referral to the help center, and then the student and their caregiver comes to the help center. And then in community education, sometimes I do provide education to students and to staff around a variety of topics.
So you do go out into the schools on occasion?
Yes, for education.
Perfect. Glad to hear that.
I know that you have a very supportive board of directors, and I know that they are open to people who are interested and qualified to want to be involved in the community and in public health in general, but particularly mental health. And so if there's anyone listening out there that is thinking maybe they could be a contributing member, I'm sure that your agency would be interested in talking to them and seeing if they could be a vital part of this effort. So
we have a lot of volunteer opportunities across our whole organization, everything from being a crisis line volunteer to helping also at Saks Thrift. Saks Thrift is our thrift store in downtown Bozeman, and we always need a lot of volunteers for that as well. And then also for our fundraising initiatives as well. So we actually have our big fundraiser, Run for Your Life, coming up on October 28th. It's a Halloween-themed 5K and kids run to benefit our suicide prevention services. If you don't want to walk or run, we always need lots of volunteers to help with that event as well.
So wear a costume that you could run in. Is that part of the message?
Costume or no costume, we want there.
Well, we do want some clothes, I think, right? I mean,
Run for a life shirt.
I was going to ask for somebody contemplating volunteering to help with the suicide prevention line. Do they need background? Do they need education in that area? Or do you provide training for the volunteers who do this vital work?
Yeah, so anyone is welcome to volunteer with us. You don't need a specific background or education or anything like that. We have a volunteer application on our website that a person could fill out. And then we would complete interviews before our volunteer training. And then we provide education not just on suicide intervention and prevention, which is a full weekend training all for itself, but then additional hours of training, a weekend training to provide support for crisis, active listening, information referral skills. And so we do provide training. So if a person is interested, no matter their background, they can fill out an application.
And actually right now we really need telecare volunteers. So telecare is another one of our kind of sub programs of the Help Center, where we make daily phone calls to homebound individuals. They tend to be elderly. And we have usually between 15 and 20 phone calls that we make a day. to check in on them. It's kind of a social call. It might be a medication reminder, just making sure they're doing okay. And we see this as crisis prevention. And so it's always in the morning. And so we have a few days open a week that we actually need telecare volunteers. The training is much shorter for that. And once you're trained, you come into the Help Center to do those phone calls. And once you're trained and feel comfortable, you can actually even do those from home. So you can hop on our website to apply for that as well.
Tell us what it's like to save a life, ladies.
I don't know if I would ever make that claim. I don't know if I would ever make the claim that I've saved a life. I think more than anything, I just feel grateful that I get to be there, that an individual took a risk, felt the vulnerability, and reached out for help, and I got to be the person to be there in that moment. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily that I saved their life. It doesn't feel that way. It just feels like I was there with them in that moment when they took a risk to see what other options were available to them, options outside of suicide. And so, I feel very honored.
Yeah, it's more like witnessing that person come to their, we are a very person-centered, I think I've said that before, person-centered organization. And it's really helping that person draw out their own strengths and their own internal skills that sometimes you forget that you have when you're in that really dark place or a moment of crisis. And so sometimes it's just being that sounding board and that witness to them finding their own strength and their own solutions. So I agree. I don't think I've ever said I've saved a life, but we have witnessed people saving their own.
You just made an extremely important point. There's a lot of research that shows the incidence of loneliness in people's lives is becoming increasingly a negative factor in American culture, maybe throughout the world, I'm not sure, but there's a great reliance on computers and doing games and talking with others remotely. And it seems like having someone to just say, I'm here, you can call, as you guys provide that service, and they don't feel quite as lonely. Do you notice that in the work that you do?
Yeah, I think so. Just in that, like, connections.
Yes.
Having a connection with another human being is so supportive. You know, you could be having the best day, but making a connection makes it better. And you could be having the worst day, and having a connection helps it feel not as the worst. And so I think connection more than anything is the thing that I really value, that I get to be a part of, right? That I get to be a part of that connection for another human being. That moment just feels really powerful, I guess.
Yeah, and I think we all forget how to listen sometimes, right? In a really fast world, and things, you know, like you are, you know, just engaging with technology and don't feel like you're actually being listened to. And so there's a lot of power in just listening to another person and giving them your undivided attention. And that creates connection. And I also think that some people who call us have maybe lost connection to people that had been supportive in their lives. And the act of connecting with us reminds them that they are capable of reconnecting again and, you know, utilizing those support systems in their lives and sort of being reminded that there are other people in their lives that do care about them.
Years ago, there was a psychologist, his name is Jeroen Bronfenbrenner, and he wrote about children and parents, and this would be true, I think, for any individual, but he said that everybody needs somebody who's crazy about him or her. And just the fact that you can pick up the phone and talk to somebody, well, that may not be defined as being crazy about him or her. It shows that you're important. Someone will listen. And if you don't have somebody in your life who's crazy about you, well, hopefully you'll find that person.
And I think it's purely golden what you're doing there and what you're accomplishing with connections. That, of course, is it. And I think anyone out in the listening audience who might have a few hours a week would really, truly benefit from this kind of golden connection and giving that you're describing.
We have about two or three more minutes. We want to be sure that Help Center says everything it wants to say and promote the project again.
So if anyone wants to get involved in our organization or to support us, you can go to BozemanHelpCenter.org. And then we just always like to reshare our numbers as many times as possible. So our local number is 406-586-3333, and people can also call 988 or 211. And then also, we didn't mention this before, but the information and resources that are available by calling 211, you can also go to montana211.org. And there is a great website and tool to be able to search community and mental health resources on your own if that is more comfortable.
Is 988 in full effect? Does it work as it should, or is it still improving or increasing?
Can you say that again? We didn't catch the first part.
Yes. Is 988 purely functional? Is it doing what it's supposed to be doing now, 988?
Yeah. It's working. I guess I'd say it's working great. It is, as a tool, I think people feel a lot more comfortable, and it creates an ease just being able to dial a three-digit number. 988 works great.
If someone should call 911, what do they do?
If someone were to call 911?
Uh-huh. Would they refer them to 988, or how does that go?
I think they take each case by case, depending on what's going on for that individual. But we try to work with 911 to do referrals, you know, both ways. If we experience someone who is in a physical emergency physical emergency, then we would obviously call 911. And if they feel like getting connected to us at the Help Center and 988 is a better resource for that individual, then they will do a warm handoff over to us as well.
In the final minute or so, would you guys talk about answering the call again?
Yeah, so Answering the Call is the campaign for Help Center, Inc. We have a goal of raising $4.5 million to support our purchase of the mental health campus to get the space that we need to have our programs and have our services. And people can go to BozemanHelpCenter.org/campaign.
Well, Dr. Suzanne and I would like to thank you, the Help Center, for doing what you do, and to thank the audience for listening today. And along with you, we encourage everyone there to be a volunteer for the Help Center. Hopefully you can give your time and your money and any referrals that need to be made to the Help Center. You can listen to this
program. Donate all your used items to the thrift store.
Absolutely.
Downtown.
Yes.
And save them for them.
Anyone can listen to this program on KGVM 95.9. You can go to kgvm.org and listen to it often, because it will be in the archives, and you can scroll down when you go to that website and look up health and happiness and any specific program. Thank you again, Gallatin Valley. Thank you, Help Center.